He taught me, keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
To infinity and beyond!
No crying! There's no crying in baseball!
My precious!
Good morning, Vietnam!
Your milkshake!
This is Sparta!
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Yeah!
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard.
Welcome to Know Your Cinema.
Welcome back to Know Your Cinema podcast. My name is Devlin Clemens, and with me as always is the one and only TikTok famous Jason Quinn. And this week we are reviewing the 2013 sequel to Machete, famously titled Machete Kills. Jason, this was a movie that you had not seen, considering you had not seen the original Machete. Let's talk about what your thoughts were on that movie.
I think that this movie is just a bananas film. It is from start to finish just absolutely nuts. There's just a whole lot of craziness going on. I really enjoy the fact that because there's such a good cast and all of the actors that are in this film are like genuinely talented actors,
right,
them playing parts where they're over the top ridiculous, they're still taking it seriously to the point where their performances are really good,
right,
being ridiculous. And I think that is one of the things that kind of sets this apart from a lot of other, like, you know, bad, like B movies, you know, is they're still doing a really good job of being really fucking ridiculous.
Right.
And so, you know, I mean, nobody's not talented in this film. Like, right. I mean, it is just across the board,
right,
just some heavy fucking hitters. And I honestly ended up finding myself being, I'll get to it when we get to it, but the performance that I found myself liking the most in this movie was somebody who I wouldn't have assumed would be my favorite performance going into it.
We're probably going to agree on this one, but
I was kind of shocked as to how good of a performance this person put into the film. But overall, I think it's fantastic. I think it's ridiculous. And I can't wait for the third one. I also love the fact that they started the movie with a trailer to the movie that hadn't been made yet.
Yeah.
Like that's so fucking, like, it's just bananas. Like, there's no, it started a film with a trailer to a movie that is the sequel to the movie you're getting ready to watch.
Right.
And throughout the entire movie, all of this shit begins to make sense. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I like the little Leonardo DiCaprio line. They're like, Leonardo DiCaprio as the man in the iron mask or whatever.
Cause he was in the movie, The Man in the Iron Mask.
Right. And then the actor subject to change. Like, I thought that shit was fucking funny.
Right. Yeah, this movie is way more campier than the first one. I just want to say that first ahead of time. But go ahead and continue. I just want to throw that out there.
Oh, it definitely is. It's got a lot of elements that you could see, like, in 60s Batman. I mean, obviously, it's a much more hyper violent version of it, but like he's got a bomb strapped to, you know, that's set to his heart's timer or what, you know what I mean? Like that I wouldn't not see in the 60s Batman.
Right.
You know what I mean? Which, you know, which is fine because 66 Batman is probably, I mean, it's probably one of the best Batman films ever made because it is so fucking like it owns the style that it is to the fullest extent and is funny as hell.
Right.
And so
Batman, much like that movie, Machete knows what it is. It right. does not try to be something that it's not. So like if they put out a third one, I'd be like, okay, I'm on board with this because I already know what I'm going to expect going into it. I don't expect a serious action flick. I expect the campy fun. And that's the thing, like I said about the last one, the movie's fun. It's fun yeah. to watch. It's not just a sense of like, this is, you know, bullets and babes and blood movie. It has those elements. What I was saying the other night, I was talking to my friend. I said, it's like watching a really bad independent wrestling show, but I'm so entertained. Like I'm not even mad that I'm watching it.
Like the slow-mo grenade one that you showed me.
Yeah, Chikara.
Yeah, it's super bad, but like it's funny as hell. So right. you're like, I'm gonna watch this.
Yeah, yeah, and there's so much, like, it's like a fanboy love letter for Rodriguez, I think, in this movie because there's so much he's fanboying in this movie. Like, there's a little James Bond. There's a little, Star Wars, a little Star Trek. A little fanboy to Lucha Libre with the mask and Mexican culture. And he's really like fanboying more in this movie than he was the original. It also has like the old scroll and beat 'em up video game like feel to it as well, because we have like an underboss that he has to defeat to get to the big boss. Mm-hmm. Like, because the first guy you meet, you feel like, okay, that guy's like a real stereotypical like 80s movie villain. And then like the fucking plot changes in the middle of that shit.
Right.
And you're like, what the fuck is going on? And then we get the real boss and it's like a completely different fucking thing that's going on. So it takes a fucking huge left turn right in the middle of the fucking plot. And you're like, okay, I'm still on board with this shit because I'm fucking entertained. So yeah, like this movie, like it's got so much really going on.
It's a movie that you can tell everybody that made this movie had a really good time making it too.
Oh yeah.
Like you can tell by their performances that if given the opportunity, any one of them would come back and do the role over again.
Absolutely. I think that some movies are like that. Like I know you're a big fan of the Sharknado movies.
Right.
So I know that like a lot of the cast has come back for the other sequels. It's also like the Tremors movies, like the Tremors movies have like
a big fan of those too.
Yeah. Like the one guy that played the dad on Family Ties has been in like all the Tremors movies. So like it has those real campy feels. The first Tremors movie was real serious, but it still had like that really hokey kind of feel as well. I think that movies like this have a great place in cinema because you can go back to this movie and just be entertained. And I've said like that a thousand times about certain films. Like I can sit down and watch The Shawshank Redemption and I have a really great feeling when I watch it. It's a very sad movie, but I feel some way when I watch that movie. When I watch Machete, I'm just entertained and like a thousand times because I'll catch little nuances in the movie and I'm like, okay, I see this little element he threw in there, like something in the background or something a character does, like a little twitch or something. And it's just so, it has that great Robert Rodriguez feel because all of his movies have this real campy kind of feel to it. Some of them not so much over the top. From Dusk Till Dawn has that, because it takes that fucking left turn fucking plot in the middle of the movie. And well, it's actually like 3/4 into the middle in the movie where
it caught me. Like, somebody just told me, hey, you need to watch this movie.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right. And like, nobody told me shit about it, but they were just like, it's a really good movie. You should definitely watch it. And, you know, I'm on board for the plot. And then when it fucking takes that turn, I was like, what the fuck? Like, what the hell was I, like, if this is the movie, yeah, what was I watching?
You know? Right. It lulls you in a false sense of security. This movie, after you've watched the first one, it doesn't, you know where it's going. You know it's going to be campy. But he does a good job of doing that left turn where you don't think there's going to be a left turn. And this, like I said, the same thing. It's kind of like a signature for his. Like, his movies, I never would think, like, oh, he's trying to be serious. It's just fun. Like, From Dusk Till Dawn, to me, is very, very vanilla through the first part of it. It's setting you up and building characters throughout that first 3/4. But then it gets fun when you get to that last part of From Dusk Till Dawn. Same thing in this movie. Like, you know, from beginning to end, you're going to just have fun. It's going to be ridiculous, over the top campy. You're going to see some fucked up shit in this movie, and you're going to laugh. You're going to be like, what the fuck? I also love the inventiveness of getting as many cameos in this movie as you can with the chameleon. That is an inventive thing that he did, by getting all those people in the movie by making them a hitman and then changing them as they go along. I thought that it was just phenomenal little piece of work there, because I've never seen that done before in a movie. So hats off.
Yeah, because it's usually like, because usually when you have that kind of a character, they replace it with an unknown. Like, it's always just some random person. It's not like,
right,
you know, fucking, you know, Antonio Banderas, Cuba Gooding Jr., you know, like, it's not like big fucking names, you know what I mean? And I can't remember the guy that's the first guy, but
Walter Goggins.
He's in Justified. And
love Walter Goggins.
That guy is fantastic. There's something about him that he just has this.
No, the guy's legitimately a chameleon as an actor. I've seen him play, you know, a character on Justified. He's also in Righteous Gemstones. He plays a preacher in Righteous Gemstones. He plays a transgender person in Sons of Anarchy. He's a chameleon actor. Because the first thing I ever saw him in was in the third Major League movie. And
there's a third Major League.
Yeah, movie? It's called Back to the Minors.
I've not seen
it. I was about to say, you've never seen it. A lot of people have never seen it because it doesn't really, it's not that good, but I still like it. But that's the first thing I ever saw him in. And I remember being him in that. And then one of my friends turned me on this show called The Shield. It was the predecessor basically to Sons of Anarchy. Kind of falls into the same sort of, not timeline, but like area of California. And it's got Michael Chiklis, and Walter Goggins plays in that too. Really good show. I highly recommend to anybody who's never seen it, go out and do yourself a favor and find The Shield and watch it. But I've always liked Walter Goggins as an actor. And he's even in Vice Principals with Danny McBride. He does it. Like I said, he plays a chameleon character.
The only thing I found disappointing in this is, like, I really would have, because he is such a good actor, I would have liked more of him.
Yeah. I think I get why they did that, and I appreciate the inventiveness that Rodriguez put in there to creating that chameleon character, the hitman. But yeah, I would have loved to have seen more Walt Goggins as in the element of that movie somehow.
Right. Yeah. Because I think, I mean, it's absolutely phenomenal the way they put all those, you know, all the characters in there, or all the actors in there as the chameleon. And it did kept you a little bit on your toes, because you, like, with the Antonio Banderas cameo.
Yeah.
You didn't know. You know what I mean? You didn't see that coming specifically. You know what I mean? And I also think that it's awesome that the entire cast of Spy Kids, minus the mom, to my knowledge, has been in the Machete movies now.
Well, yeah, Rodriguez directed the Spy Kids movie.
Well, I mean, these are prequels.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Machete is their uncle in the Spy Kids movies.
Gotcha.
You didn't know that?
I read something. I didn't read the complete like tie-in, but I read that Machete was in the Spy Kids movies.
Yeah, he is there. He plays Uncle Machete, and he makes all of their gadgets.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good to know.
And
I've never seen the Spy Kids movies, so.
Keith Marin's in there, too. But we'll have to watch at least the first two Spy Kids movies. They're pretty decent. They're ridiculous. I mean, they're
it's why we have this podcast. I can't argue if you put Spy Kids on the list.
I mean, they're not like hit movies by any means, but like I enjoyed them when I was growing up.
It was in that time period where I didn't watch little kids movies, so. And you're 7 years younger than I am, so
they were the tits for me when I was growing up. Well, they were.
I mean, how'd you feel now seeing what's her name all grown up?
Alexa Vega. I verbally said, "Wow!" Like,
did you get slapped? Did
no,
Kylan give you the business on that one? She
didn't watch this movie.
Oh, good. You verbally said wow by yourself. Did you look around me like, I was
like, oh shit, like,
there's no one here. I need to text Devlin. You should have messaged me and been like, wow.
Yeah.
And I'd have been like, what's that for?
I called my buddy and I was like, hey, have you seen Machete Kills? And he's like, no, I haven't seen any of them. You told me to watch the first one, but I haven't watched it yet. I'm like, oh, you should definitely. And he's like, yeah, you were telling me about it with the Spy Kids thing. I'm like, yeah, she's grown up in the second one. He was like, yeah, I always thought she was cute when we were growing up and stuff. Cause you know, like we were around the same age and shit. And I'm like, yeah, no, I when I was a little kid and shit, I found her attractive too. And he's like, you know, is she pretty when she grows up? I'm like, bro. I was like, bro, it's worth the price of admission just for her role.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of a girl as I was growing up, like in the movies that like when they grew up, I was just like, holy shit. Like, I can't really think of that. Like, it wasn't someone that I was like attracted to, but it was like, Tatum O'Neal was in Rescue Me, and Tatum O'Neal played in the original Bad News Bears. And then when I was watching Rescue Me, she ends up being one of the main characters' sisters, and I'm like, and she has like a major role in the latter part of the series. And I'm like, Tatum O'Neal, why does that name sound so goddamn familiar? And I looked, I was like, holy shit, it's a girl from Bad News Bears. Like, I didn't realize it.
Yeah, I think, to my knowledge, Alexa Vega is probably the only person that I can think of that was, I mean, other than the girl that's in The Pretty Reckless, who was Cindy Lou Who. Is that the right band?
Yeah, Pretty Reckless, yeah.
Who I initially found like super attractive, but then her personality was like, eh.
Yeah. I try not to partake in Pretty Reckless music purchases or putting them over too much, just because I've heard interviews with her where I'm just like, this girl's a not so nice person. And then my nephew actually had a really bad experience at a festival with her interaction with her.
Yeah, I'm a real big I'm real big on like if I meet a band, and I've met like a lot of bands, and the person that I'm meeting, the members of the band that I'm meeting, is just like seemingly ungrateful that I'm like, you know, that I paid my price of admission and maybe even more to come meet them, you know what I mean? And they're just going to treat me like shit. You've lost me as a fan. Like completely. And I've definitely, there's been quite a few bands that I've walked away from like, all right, Deuces. I'll never buy another piece of merch, another CD, you know. Yeah, it's just, I'm done.
But, yeah, I mean, we've discussed this many a times on the podcast in regards to that. So but back to Machete. Let's talk about some of this cast. Like, when you just don't think that they can outdo themselves in a cast, they bring in some heavy hitters of Hollywood.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you get, obviously we have Mel Gibson is a big part of the film.
We got old Tiger Blood himself, Charlie Sheen.
Carlos Estevez.
Sorry, Carlos Estevez. I'm sorry, he went by his shoot name. He went by his given name.
Yeah.
I apologize.
There was like, I was reading like a little interview about the Carlos Estevez thing where he thought that was funny as hell.
Yeah. Yeah. We also got, of course, we got Michelle Rodriguez. We got Amber Heard, who was really just kind of getting started in Hollywood.
Yeah, I'm not a big Amber Heard fan.
Yeah, I'm not a really big fan. I'm not a fan of her personally.
Yeah.
Michelle Rodriguez, of course. We had Lady Gaga, Antonio Banderas. We had Cuba Gooding Jr.,
mm-hmm.
Vanessa Hudgens. We had the great Tom Savini, who I want to give some well wishes to. He got hit by a car recently and was in the hospital. Tom Savini, for those of you who are not in the know about movies, Tom Savini is one of the greatest makeup special effects artists of all time. Did work. He did the remake of the 1990 Night of the Living Dead. So, and he's done a lot of makeup work in a lot of horror films. So a lot of the classic 80s horror films that you see, Tom Savini did the work in those. So best wishes to him, though. I just happened to read an article the other day about him getting in that car accident. Yeah, those are really the big names that are in there. There are some up and coming stars in that role. Rodriguez brought back his nieces, the Avalan twins, Elise and Electra.
Did you mention Sofia Vergara?
Sofia Vergara, no, I did not. Vergara is in there.
I thought you might have missed her, but a
couple little cameos people didn't notice that I did. They had Jesse James, the famous motorcycle motorcycle builder from Monster's Garage. He was in there as one of the bodyguards for the president, and
I liked that during the random scene where they called the president, it was like his phone was answered by one girl and then handed to like three more before it got to him. I was like
I'm pretty sure that's like an ode to Charlie Sheen himself, or excuse me, Carlos Estevez himself.
You're right. I'm pretty sure he was like, well, I'll do the movie, but only if.
Yeah. We got this great scene for you there, Charlie. It's you were in a bed with three women.
He's like,
so you're going to film a Friday night? Like,
it's like he goes, all right, but I'm going by Carlos Estevez.
So for those of you who don't know, Charlie Sheen, his mother's last name is Estevez. And so Carlos Estevez, that's Charles in Spanish. So that's what the big joke is right there. That's why his brother goes by Emilio and he goes by Charlie. He also had a sister, Renee, who was a very short.
Okay, you just blew my fucking mind.
Yeah.
Charlie Sheen and Emilio Estevez are brothers.
Yeah, you didn't know that.
I did not know that.
Yeah, they're both.
Get the fuck out of here.
Swear to God. You didn't know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, they're a family of actors. Get the fuck out of here. Yeah, Google it.
Fuck out of here.
Yeah, I can't believe you didn't know that.
I can't believe I didn't know that either.
I've known that since I was like six. He's googling. He's fact checking me on while we're actually recording right now.
Get the fuck out of here.
He's blown his fucking mind.
Get the fuck out of here.
They have a sister, Renee. She had a very short lived acting career as well. She's actually in Sleepaway Camp Part 2.
I knew Martin Sheen, you know, obviously. Martin Sheen,
yep.
But I didn't know that was, man, I am blown away. Holy shit.
I can't believe you never put that together when they said Carlos Estevez. I can't believe you never put that together.
I had a thought. Yeah. But I didn't put it all the way together.
Well, I guess I'm making...
How did we not talk about this during Young Guns?
I mentioned that they were brothers because they were playing in the same movie.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was assuming was that we would...
But I don't think we ever talked about the fact that Charlie Sheen goes by his father's name and Emilio goes by his mother's name. I thought it was like public knowledge that those two were brothers.
It is public knowledge. It's just not knowledge that I had.
Well, I mean, I thought everybody knew. You didn't grow up in the 80s, but I thought everybody who knew that family knew that those.
Well, they're so separated,
right?
That I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here.
I feel like I just blew your mind. Like you just keep saying that.
Like a little bit. Yeah, like I'm a little bit like, because like I grew up watching the two of them, but right. Very separately.
Most of your generation knows Emilio from Mighty Ducks.
Gordon Bombay.
Well, yeah, your generation knows him as that. I know him as the kid from Breakfast Club and then Billy the Kid. And then he became Gordon Bombay. So he did like a lot of safe movies, whereas Charlie Sheen just kept doing, he did a lot of adult pictures. By adult pictures, I don't mean porno movies. I mean,
he might have, we don't know.
He might have, yeah, he probably did. But I'm saying like more adult themed movies like Wall Street and Platoon. And, you know, he had a very small part in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Major League, go down the list of Charlie Sheen movies that I've seen.
I think I was first introduced to him in Major League.
That doesn't surprise me. It's kind of that's like 88. So that's like towards the end of his big run in the 80s.
It is legitimately insane to me that Emilio Estevez is Charlie Sheen's brother.
Yeah,
I'm like still a little bit hung up on it.
Okay,
I'm gonna be probably like for the rest of the day, like get the fuck out of here.
Should you be more hung up on the fact that John Hughes used both brothers in two different movies?
No, I mean, I still think Emilio Estevez's scene in The Breakfast Club where he's high is quite possibly one of the greatest scenes in cinematic history because it makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah.
Like they were bowling a 300 and hit like 9 pins on the final frame. Like that's the quality of that fucking scene.
We have a Breakfast Club episode, folks, if you've not listen to our podcast before. So if you want to go back in the archives, it's there. We reviewed it along with our other co-host, Viva Matthew, who, by the way, we want to give him a shout out. He is going to become a father again for the third time. So congratulations to Vivin. Woo. We're welcoming another boy. Don't have a name yet. We think it's going to be Nolan Christopher, just as a theory. So shout out to Viv. Congratulations, buddy, if you listen to this. You and the wife, Beth. We love you guys. But yeah, we have a Breakfast Club episode. And we talk about a particular scene where everybody in the tension gets high. And Emilio somehow screams so loud that it shatters the glass on the door. and it's not made into like a dream sequence or a, you know, I'm really, really high, like buzzing out of body experience. It's like frame for frame, like an actual scene in real life.
And so it's like everybody in the scene smoked a joint, and then Emilio went and hung out with Charlie and did some coke. Like, it's like those are the things that happened in that thing there.
Yeah, you know what? I started looking at Charlie Sheen's resume, and I started thinking, like, he's in some of like my favorite movies.
I mean, Charlie Sheen has an impressive work catalog.
Yeah, he's in Eight Men Out, which is a baseball movie. And he's in Young Guns. I as much as it's not historically accurate, I do love the movie Young Guns. He's in Major League, which is a phenomenal baseball movie. He's in Hot Shots. Have you ever seen Hot Shots?
Man, it sounds super familiar.
It's a parody movie of like Top Gun and Rambo. And...
Oh, no, I haven't seen it. It sounds super familiar simply because... it was one of the one because it's technically a legitimate movie in the Die Hard franchise. Okay. Because technically, he's legitimately in there.
Okay. And then he's in the Disney live action version of the Three Musketeers, which has one of the best. Have you ever seen that? I don't think you've ever seen that. Kiefer Sutherland, Charlie Sheen, Chris O'Donnell, Oliver Platt, Tim Curry.
I think I've seen parts of it.
So you've only seen parts of the live action Three Musketeers.
Yeah, I think it's like a TBS kind of a situation. Okay. Like I've seen parts of it sometime.
I got you. Okay. Well, I might have to put it on the list since you've only TBS'd it. It's a great movie. You don't really, if you already know the story, you don't really have to be into it. It's more of like how the performances are and the characters really for that movie. So maybe we'll put it on the list for you. But we have gone off the reservation, so to speak, for Machete. If I have any final thoughts about this particular film, it is, again, if you're going to watch this, it is, don't go into it thinking that it's a very serious movie. If you go ahead and watch the first one and then go into the second one. The first one is ridiculous as well, but not as ridiculous as this one. And this is like ridiculous on steroids. If I had to put it in a frame, like I said, there's left turns. Like it's basically like sometimes it's going in circles and then sometimes it's straight at you. And then sometimes it's a right turn and left turn and then a right turn. It's all over the place at times, but it keeps you engaged. And that's what's great about this movie. Jason, you got anything else?
Yeah. I mean, it is definitely all over the place. There's just so much going on but it's surprisingly easy to follow with as much as it is that's going on in it. And it's just something that you can sit down and you can turn your brain off for a little bit. And I think we all need that from time to time.
Yeah.
Just an opportunity to just, you know, just be in the moment. and this is a really good movie for that.
Yeah, absolutely. A little bit of comedy, a little action, good story. Some drama thrown in there. It's got a little bit of everything for a little romance too thrown in there as well. Yeah, not to take away from that or from any movie. All right, let's talk about favorite scenes.
My favorite scene is just like a little instance that it was a callback to the first movie where he rips a dude's intestines out and swings through a building. In this one, he rips a dude's intestines out and then throws it into a helicopter blade. And then it just chops him and spins him around and shit. And I thought that that was super funny. In all reality, it's like the most violent thing that happens in the film, but it is still funny.
There's a scene, my favorite scene, when he's trying to save, I don't know the character's name off the top of my head. Let me find it here. It's like the first bad guy. Give me a second. It's Mendez. He's trying to save him. He takes him to the, like, makeshift hospital. And I don't know why it cracks me up every time, because the character Mendez has so many personalities. But when they're trying to escape and Mendez is all better, he's like, ha-ha! And, like, Machete throws that knife. He laughs in the face of whoever's trying to shoot him. And then, like, Machete pulls him forward and throws a knife at him. I don't know why, but I love that scene for whatever reason it was, just because the character is just so over the top and like just has so many personalities. Like, you just don't know what when you're getting him, but he's laughing in the face of danger, so to speak. But I love the fact that the renegade prostitutes, like, he puts that heart in that microwave and then it explodes, and like, or that blood, the blood in the microwave, and explodes, and they all come out and they're like, oh, like, it's just like, it's like the most over the top, like, getaway scene of all time. And he takes an ambulance that's a station wagon, and the light's on when he leaves, like, they can't follow the light. Like, like, it's just so over the top and ridiculous, but it's so funny. Like, that, just that quick little laugh that Mendez character gives out right before Machete, like, kills somebody with a knife.
It does have he did a really good job in the film, to be fair.
Yeah.
He wasn't my favorite performance, but he did do a really good job.
Right. Right.
Quotes.
This movie has a lot of good quotes in it. Like, it's hard just to pick one, but it has a lot of good quotes in it. But I'm going to try here. It is. So I'm going down the list of quotes here, and I just can't just pick one. It's very hard. I think it's when Vaz is talking to the Machete, and he says, "I just gotta say that you're one genuine article, Genghis Khan, high caliber fucker people upper."
It does have a fair amount of, like, fantastic quotes. I love all of, like, the running gag of, like, Machete don't joke, Machete don't fail, Machete don't tweet. Like, I don't know. Because, I mean, he doesn't really have a whole lot of lines in this entire film. For being the main character, he really doesn't talk that much. And a good portion of what he says is, like, that, like, running gag of, like, Machete don't whatever. And so, I mean, I know it's not like one particular quote, but I really like, I feel like it has such a potential to even make additional quotes that may not even be in the fucking movie, but, like, you know what I mean? Like, you can, Machete don't eat frozen yogurt. Like, you can say that shit and it just still fits that theme. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so I really like that quote theme that they have running throughout it. And the first one, to be fair, it runs through both of them.
Right. It's kind of the catchphrase, like, Machete don't insert whatever here.
Right.
I gotcha. Favorite performances.
My favorite performance was Sofia Vergara.
Okay. That's not the one I was thinking of, but
I thought she had some of the most difficult scenes to keep a straight face in, and she crushed it. I also felt like her character was just over the top, and it was completely different from, like, the only other real instance that I can think of that I've really seen her in it prominently is in, like, Modern Family.
Right.
So it's such a difference from that. And I don't know, like, I've always liked her as, like, a person or whatever, but, like, and I think she's fantastic on Modern Family, but I never would have expected that her performance would be the one that stuck out the most to me. But, like, she had some of the scenes in this movie that were just fucking hilarious. Like, when she asks for her, like, her strap on, and she's got the fucking little strap on dick gun, and, like, that's fucking hilarious. Like, that is,
it's funny.
Fucking,
she has so the pelvic thrust to fire the thing,
right? Yeah, that's so fucking funny. And, like, she nailed that performance, because, like, can you imagine how many fucking takes that it would take to crush that? And she does it with such anger the whole time, like, she's screaming, like,
yeah.
It's that, to me, like, that, and then, like, she's got the double D, like, fucking machine gun ghiblies.
He popped me. He made a throwback to Austin Powers. Machine gun jubblies. I don't see that.
But, like, it just, I don't know. For me, those couple of scenes, and then, like, her whole, like, demeanor and attitude throughout this film was, like, it just had me, like, I had a smile on my face every scene that she was in. And so I don't know how often it's going to be that I'm going to get an opportunity to give Sofia Vergara my, you know, top performance. So,
yeah,
here it is.
Yeah, no, her performance is really good. Like, it's not a throwaway character. It's kind of essential to part of the plot line. So for her to be in there, it all kind of makes sense. It's really great portrayal that she does there, because she's just kind of playing a character. It's not nothing special that you're going to have to go, you know, go to an award ceremony to win an award. You know, she's basically an ass kicking mom or den mother to these really badass prostitutes that she's taking care of, so to speak. But I'm gonna shock you with this one. I really thought Amber Heard had a really good performance in this.
Nope.
And I don't like Amber Heard personally, but I thought that the character she portrayed and the way she portrayed it, and she had some funny moments in this too. But I have to give it to her, because I thought that she did a really good job with the character that she was given for this movie. And again, as much as I don't like her personally and what she's done in her personal life, I can't really take away from an acting performance of that caliber. In an over-the-top movie, she did a really good job of kind of keeping it on the straight and narrow, but yet also being able to throw out those little comedy jabs every once in a while and have some really good one-liners as well.
I see where you're coming from.
Yeah.
But I just...
That's fine. And no, that's what we're here for.
I can't do it.
That's all right. And that's okay. Like I said, I can put personal preferences aside and see things with rose colored lenses. So again, you know, it's not a secret. You can get on the internet and just type in Amber Heard and you'll find the articles and the things that we're talking about, per se. And I don't want to make this into an Amber Heard bashing session, but she's not such a good person in real life. So but I don't want to take that away from her acting performance. So she's my favorite actor / actress in this film. Ratings, sir.
Before we get into ratings, did you know Danny Trejo has either in production or pre-production or completed movies, is 22 movies on IMDb that are either in production, completed, or like actually, you know, like in pre-production. Isn't that fucking insane? That dude does so many movies.
I mean, you take, and how, you know, let's be honest. There's Danny Trejo's leading role is this movie. That, like, major motion picture by a major studio. You know, I'm not saying Danny Trejo can't play that character. He's proven that he can. But he gets typecast a lot. So you take what work you can get and you take all of it and you work. And he's I think he's like 70 something years old too. So
he had 24 movies or TV shows that he was in just 2020.
Yeah.
That dude is putting in work.
Yeah. I mean, you live in Hollywood, you got to get paid. You got to pay the bills, man. Take what you can get.
Yeah. I mean, you got to give it to him. Man.
Yeah, it's like I attribute it to being like an indie wrestler. If someone says they want to book you on a show, if it's a legitimate show, you go work it. Get your name out there, do what you gotta do, make your money. Maybe something bigger comes along.
Yep.
That happens. Ratings, sir. I'll go first. I like the first one better. I really do. This one has its own feel to it, and I don't want to bastardize it too much. I think that the campiness can be a little much at times in this movie. I like a lot of things though that I talked about, you know, the innovative way to get all the cameos in, the high cast of characters that they got in there, the actors. So there's a lot of great going on in this movie. Like I said, I just think the campiness in this movie can get to you a little bit if you're watching it. So I'm going to give this one a 9.5.
I'm going to join you there on that one because I kind of felt the same way. It's not a bad movie by any stretch of the imagination, and a 9.5 is a phenomenal rating. But the first one's just a little bit better, I think. It's a little bit of a more grounded story, and I think that makes up for.
I think the pace of play on that one's a little more to digest. It still has that good campy feel, but it also is very slow in parts and builds up a little bit more. Whereas this one's just like boom, 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 ridiculousness, 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 and it can, like I said, it can be a lot to digest for anyone who's maybe not like I said. Don't just jump into Machete Kills.
Right.
Versus going and watching the first one, because yes, you'll get caught up on the story, but you might hate this movie because you don't understand what it's trying to do if you don't watch the first one. But again, like I said, I think that the campiness of this one is just a lot to digest.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I think it's going to be only heightened when we get to the third one. Yes. But I do think and honestly, the Sharknado series is a lot like that too. The first one is definitely a much more grounded film, and then by the time you get to the third one, it's like, what the fuck? Like it's gone off the rails, and you know, in all the best and worst ways. So, and then they made six of them in total. So if that tells you where they're at on that, But yeah, I mean, it's a great movie, and it's definitely worth the watch. But if you haven't seen the first one, watch it first.
Yep, most definitely. All right, Jason, are you ready to move on to segment two?
Yes, most certainly I am, sir.
All right, folks, stay with us for segment two of Know Your Cinema Podcast, the Get to Know Your Cinema section of our podcast, right after these messages from us here at Know Your Cinema Podcast and Anchor. Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening and supporting Know Your Cinema Podcast. If you like what you hear in this episode, please check out our vast library of over 60 episodes covering a wide variety of films from comedy, action, horror, and everything in between. You can listen to the show on Anchor, Spotify, and Google Podcast. Also, check out our social media platforms for fan polls and interaction with all the hosts of Know Your Cinema Podcast. Give us a like at Facebook at Know Your Cinema Podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at KYC Podcast. And now, without any further ado, back to the show.
Welcome back to Know Your Cinema. This is the Get to Know Your Cinema segment, the second segment of our show. Today, in this segment, we are going to be asking a question. And my question is that we recently had an unexpected, crazy weather snowfall out of nowhere, right? So my question is, what is a movie that is based on a very unexpected, maybe weather event or some sort of natural related disaster, that is a movie that is your favorite?
Well, I'm going to answer Jason's for you. It's Sharknado. He's gonna say Sharknado.
I'm not going to say Sharknado.
I'm not really into those types of like end of the world movies. So this is going to be a hard question for me to answer. So you're going to have to come back to me. I'm going to have to think about this because I've only seen a handful of them. So yeah, definitely come back to me on this one.
You've only seen a handful of them, you said?
Yeah, none of them. I'm not a real big fan of them. Matt was a huge fan of like the end of the world, natural disaster, Earth's climate changing, meteors hitting the ocean, causing huge waves kind of movies. I wasn't. So, yeah, I never got into those. So this is a really hard question for me. Like I said, I don't even think I can name one off the top of my head that I've actually seen cover to cover.
Okay. So I think my favorite is Deep Impact.
Okay.
I don't know. I liked it a lot when I was a kid. It happened to be like, for some reason, the one like disaster type movie like that we owned. So I saw it quite a few times as a kid. It's not necessarily my favorite genre either. However, the movie 2012 is a phenomenal movie, not because it's actually good, but because it's so fucking terrible that it is good. Like, it's so bad. It's like literally every second of that fucking film is like, okay, they escape this thing. But in the process of them escaping this one disaster, another thing starts up, and then they have to like, it just, it's like a fucking ever rolling tank of disaster that they're dealing with. And like, I feel like they were just in the fucking, you know, writer's room, just like, I mean, like, okay, well, they're escaping the airport in a plane. They finally made it out of this area. Oh, nope. The runway's crumbling underneath them. Like, it's like the dumbest shit after the dumbest shit after the dumbest shit. And eventually it just culminates in like a super dumb ending. And you're like, all right, that's where we're at. But I personally like stupid over the top movies. I also really like Sharknado, but I don't consider Sharknado is an over the top disaster movie, but I wouldn't consider it in this category, in my opinion. Also really like Armageddon, but mostly because of the soundtrack.
You're a big fan of Aerosmith?
Yeah, actually. I do like Aerosmith quite a bit.
I'm not such a big, huge fan of Aerosmith. I respect what they've done.
I mean, I'm not going to sit here and be like, bro, Steven Tyler is a god. But like, you know.
I get that. I think the one that I've seen, it's been so long that I remember watching it. It's been so long since I've seen it, I can't remember if it's good or not. But it's a movie that stars Sylvester Stallone. It's called Daylight. It's a disaster in New York tunnel as an explosions collapse both ends of the tunnel, and one hero tries to help the people inside find their way to safety.
Can't go wrong with a little Stallone.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like a natural disaster, but it's kind of got that feel to it. I was looking at disaster movies, and I'm like, I can't find one that I've actually seen that I would, you know, I would care about. And that was, you know, it's just, I'm not seeing a lot of Armageddon's on here. I've seen it. They're putting movies in here I wouldn't consider natural disaster movies. Like, they put Speed on here.
Yeah, they put Skyscraper on here too, which is not, I wouldn't really consider that.
They put the core on here. I mean, the core wasn't too bad. Put Space Cowboys on here. They got Executive Decision, which is a fantastic movie too.
You know what? Another one is really that I really enjoyed would be Twister. I would actually
probably Twister. Yeah, that's a good one. Twister's probably a really good movie.
I would probably replace Deep Impact with Twister because Twister was really fucking good.
Yeah, Twister was excellent. Twister was an excellent movie. I'm reading an article where they're ranking the movies, and they got Twister at number 30, which is really weird.
What could it?
But I remember the first one I ever seen was The Towering Inferno. It's really like 1970s movie. It's an older movie. I remember watching that with my dad when I was like 3. Like on a little 13-inch television in his apartment.
Okay, I guess I can understand by what they have, how they're considering it, what they have number one, but still.
Yeah, The Vulture is what wrote this article, so I'm going through it. They got Airplane at 10, which Airplane's a spoof movie. I mean, we could if we're throwing that in there, we could throw Die Hard 2 in there for crying out loud.
Oh, you know what? Actually, I know what your favorite one is, but you don't realize.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Was it Titanic?
This is the End.
You know what? I didn't realize it. It is This is the End.
Yeah.
I in my mind, I don't think of that as an End of the World movie until you said it. But yeah, it's definitely This is the End. That movie is my favorite comedy of all time.
Yeah.
And I could watch that movie 1,000 times and be entertained. And there's one particular scene where I just catch Seth Rogen laughing the whole time. And they had to cut like the shots of his back and his back. You can see his back jiggling because he's laughing so hard.
And that would be a movie that, like, I would have paid good money to be on the set for even a single day.
You just want to be on there for Hermione.
I mean, granted, she's obviously, I've always had a thing for her, but like, that's not the reason. It's really just that group of people together.
Yeah.
I can't imagine not just like you would probably go home in fucking pain.
Bruised ribs.
Yeah. Bruised ribs. You would be hurt from laughing so fucking hard.
Yeah. I'm sure that movie took a while to produce just because of the outtakes that took place. Cause there's no way that you can contain, cause a lot of it was ad lib.
It was in production for like 5 fucking years.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's just no way that you're going to be able to contain yourself. Like, I love The Hangover. I think The Hangover is one of the greatest comedies of all time. I love it. I watched
it. Had they stopped at the first one, it would, I mean, granted the other two are whatever, but like, I know some people think
two's good. I like two. I don't think it holds candle to one because one was so out there, ridiculous and funny, but This is the End because it's a standalone and it's just amazing. Like, I love it. I love that movie so much. And there's people who are like, that movie's so stupid and the plot's so stupid. I'm like, the plot, that's
The plot is amazing in that movie.
I love the let's do all the drugs. That's like,
I mean, you have little food at that point because Danny decided to cook all of it in one sitting.
Right.
And what else you got to do? I mean, you're kind of stuck in a house of what are you going to do? You have more drugs than you do food. What are you going to do?
I just like that their answer wasn't like, let's pace ourselves on the drugs. It was like, all right, let's do all the drugs right now.
I just love how they're like, we're going to remake our own movie. We're going to do part twos to our movies. So.
Right.
Did Pineapple Express 2 and made Woody Harrelson the villain.
Man, that's such a good movie though.
Yeah, anybody that's not seen This Is the End, God, do yourself a favor, go watch it. If you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't. I personally love it. And to be my favorite comedy of all time, like that, it took a lot. But I just remember I laughed so hard at one particular scene that I had to pause the movie because I almost passed out. I almost passed out from laughter, and that it's only happened one other time, and that was in The Night Before.
That
and Jason,
exactly what you're talking about.
And I laughed so hard at that scene.
I still do.
Oh, yeah,
I know it's coming, and I can't handle it.
It is one of the funniest scenes in cinematic history, and I have to like, I'm like Jason, I know that scene is coming. Pardon the pun. I know that scene is coming. But it still gets me every single time. The laughter's not as hard as it was the first time I watched it, but it still makes me laugh really hard. But that first time, I had to pause and finish the scene because I could not breathe. I laughed so hard. Nothing vocally came out of my body. Like if you've ever laughed so hard that it's air, and then air just completely stops, and now it's just your mouth is open and your tears are rolling down your face and you've peed yourself a little. Like that is it's the closest to passing out that I've ever been in my life naturally.
Yeah, there's one I don't think that this movie is by any means like a masterpiece, and I'm sure you've never seen it. But there's a movie with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler called Baby Mama. Have you ever seen that one?
I've never seen it.
Yeah. There's a scene in that movie that when I went to go see it in theaters, and I love Tina Fey and Amy Poehler so much, and they're phenomenal together. But this one particular scene in there that I'm not going to name, because now that I know that you haven't seen it, I'm going to put it on here. Even though you're going to take some points off because of one of the other people that's in the movie, but it's just, I remember in theaters laughing so hard that like there was tears crawling out of my face, and like I fell on the floor, like I collapsed on the floor, and it was the first time that I had ever had that happen. Because usually I watch a lot of more comedies in my home than I do going to the theaters to watch them. So I've never had that happen in public, but like I just couldn't control my whole fucking body. And that's one of the fucking greatest feelings of all time, is when you're laughing so hard that you can't even control, like you've lost all fucking control of your entire own self.
Yeah.
And the scene in The Night Before does that shit to you.
Yeah.
I gave myself a couple of Pineapple Express
images from laughing so hard that from like my eye, like I busted blood vessels in my eye because I laughed so hard, and I didn't realize the next morning. And I got up and my whole eye was like hurting, and I looked in the mirror and it looked like I had like got punched in my eye. Like that is how hard I laughed at that scene.
What's weird is I don't consider Seth Rogen to be one of my favorite like actors.
Correct.
But I'll watch any movie that he's done.
Correct. I'm in the same boat. I have a friend who does not understand my affinity for Seth Rogen. And I'm like, there's something about the nerdiness and the way he can visualize comedy sometimes and like deliver. Like, to me, that scene is all about the visual aids, the situation that he's in with the drugs, mm-hmm. and the dialogue that is written for him at that point in time and how he's delivering it. And it's the inner monologue in his head, because he's not saying it out loud. So he's thinking. So it's more funny because you, the audience, can hear his voice. Uh-huh. His friends can't. Because if he shows his friends what is on that phone, that scene loses whatever it is. To me, that how that was written and how it was portrayed visually on whatever storyboard or whatever they put it on is genius, because it's literally giving you those. It doesn't work without the visual aids. It's everything. It's like the perfect storm of comedy, because it's doing things that you normally wouldn't do in a comedy situation to make it funny.
Yeah, it works so well. And I don't know, man. Seth Rogen movies have been some of the movies that have made me laugh the hardest.
Yeah.
Like that movie, This Is the End. Pineapple Express is a heavy hitter for me.
Yep.
I'm going to probably give the dude infinite chances, because there's also been some that I'm like,
yeah.
Like I watched.
He's good. He's good in 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Mm-hmm.
He's good and knocked up. He's good. I mean, the guy, if you ever watched Freaks and Geeks, he's good in that. I mean, I'm not saying like the movies he's put out is like, you know, I'm going to go and like, you know, give him like Oscars or anything. But when it comes to comedy, the guy knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with Danny McBride. Like, I absolutely love Danny McBride, Craig Robinson, that whole crew. Now, I think that's another reason why that movie appeals to me so much, is because you have a bunch of comedians in that movie. Like, these guys understand comedy, but they're all different.
Mm-hmm.
They all play a different part. Like, McBride's character is funny, but he's an asshole. Craig is like, he's kind of laid back and like smart aleck, and Seth Rogen's character is kind of like, he's just kind of like the scaredy cat, but you still feed off of that. Like the scene where the dude gets his head cut off and like instinctively he screams like a girl and kicks the damn head. Like, that's funny. Or when Jonas turns into the demon and he's like, oh, he's like, are you good? He's like, don't titty fuck me. He's like, what are they? The small A's or little B's?
And Jonah Hill's funny as fuck in that too, because he's not like, I mean, you wouldn't expect, like, I don't expect him to be this perfect human being that he portrays like himself to be in the movie, and that's what makes it even fucking funnier. And then you have what's his face from Superbad? I can't think what the hell the kid's name is. Oh man, he's in Superbad. He plays like a crazy version of himself.
Michael Cera.
Michael Cera, yeah. And he's it's like the two of them kind of like are like completely. It's not even flip flop, because I don't expect Jonah Hill to be going around grabbing Rihanna's ass either. But like,
funny part like, about that scene is she really smacked him.
I believe it.
She really smacked him. Say cheese, baby.
Say cheese.
But no, for me, Michael Cera gets typecast in these certain types of characters. Even in Scott Pilgrim versus the World, he's kind of like that really like nerdy, like non-believable kind of like hero. But then he ends up being like the guy everybody roots for in most movies.
Mm-hmm.
And This Is the End, while he's a very bit character, we get that flash into like, is this the real Michael Cera? Is he doing coke on the table and getting rusty trombones in the bathroom while sipping on a Capri Sun?
It hits so good. Like, we're gonna have to review that movie just for the fucking fun of it. But just,
I'm all game. All game for that, for reviewing that movie. I fucking love that movie.
It's we have to come up with some sort of,
I mean, we already did, you know, the Christmas. We already did the night before for the Christmas season, so. And like I said, I have to prepare myself for that scene because I don't know how I'm going to react, because that to me is one of the most underrated Christmas movies out there.
Oh, yeah.
Because when I didn't hear about it until
it's hard to find.
Yeah, I was walking through a Walmart or Target or something, and I saw, and they had like this Christmas section up like they always do every year. And it was like $5. And I was like, okay, Seth Rogen, I'm sold. Like,
I'll pay five bucks for Seth Rogen.
Like, if I don't like it, I spent $5. Who cares? And it's a classic story, but it's a reimagining of a classic story. And
several classic stories, actually, to be fair.
Right. Yeah. Several classic Christmas stories. It's fucking funny. It's funny.
Really,
and if you don't like that movie, walking away from it, you don't have a funny bone.
Yeah, I don't know how you could walk away from that movie and not laugh.
Because if you don't like the scene we're talking about, the damn church scene is fucking hilarious too.
Oh god!
Did you hiss at that baby? Don't you puke? Swallow it like a girl. Like, I mean, this is it. Like I said, Seth Rogen, we've discredited him. I think we've discredited Seth Rogen. He physically gets like the physical aspect of comedy, the facial expressions, the things that you can visually see on a screen. But then like the things that that's written in there, if you're writing for Seth Rogen, you have to, if you have him in mind, you understand that then. And I think that like, even in like Zach and Miri, there's just a little scene where like he lifts the toilet lid and he's like, he lifts his head up and he's like, there's poo in there. Like, it's funny. Like how his eyes are wide and he's like, there's poo in there. And it's a funny scene just because of how he delivered that with like the eyes open and the seriousness of like, there's poo in there.
Yeah, I mean, and to be fair, he does do a fair amount of the writing,
right?
For a lot of his stuff too. So it's not like he's just that way as an actor. He just,
right, like Superbad. Mm. That him and his friend had written that when they were kids, yeah. And he didn't really have a big part in that movie. But a lot of that comedy that he wrote comes into play there. But that movie as a whole is not just all about comedy. It's a very good story. So, I mean, we are literally over here just like kissing his ass. But I mean, I got to give it up to him. Like, I will watch anything that he's in. And most people are like, oh, he's not trying to be an Academy Award winning actor. That's the thing, is he knows where his bread is buttered. Mm-hmm. He knows comedy is where he is going to make his paycheck. Now, there have been some fucking shitty ones. Sausage Party would be the one where I'm like, whew, like we're cruising along here, and then we just go right off the cliff, and then that movie just nosedives.
Yeah, he really hasn't done anything other than that, anything since that. I mean, he did The Neighbors too.
Those are phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, they're not bad by any means.
I watched both of them simply because the first one, that the scene where, or the whole setup with the damn airbags, you didn't know when one was coming. The whole setup with those is fucking hilarious.
Yeah, he is. He wrote a good portion. Like, he wrote that apparently too. Did you know he wrote Bad Boys 2? Was one of the writers on Bad Boys 2?
I can see it.
That's a little bit. I mean, he only did a rewrites on it, but like, still.
Yeah, I mean, I can see it.
that's something.
But yeah, no, I can't wait to see what else is next.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Jason, do you have the wheel ready?
Certainly, sir. I've got the wheel. It's right here.
All right.
Shaped.
If you would like to let the fine folks know what is on my side of the wheel and then your side of the wheel, and then I will reveal the movie that I'm going to add in replacement of Machete.
So the movies that I have put on the wheel for Devlin to watch are Moana, Trolls, and Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, Part 1. And Aquaman and Sharknado. And then the movies Devlin has put on for me are Smokey and the Bandit, JFK, Demolition Man, Phantasm 2, and you're adding...
I'm going to be adding the film Almost Famous.
Almost Famous. Okay.
I actually had an epiphany this weekend while I was driving down the road, and I remembered when I was listening to the radio, I remembered you had never seen this film. And this is one of my all-time favorite movies. Probably in my top 10. Love this film. Can watch it. I haven't watched it in for so long. I'm jonesing to kind of watch it. So I was like, I remember Jason saying you never seen this film. So I put it on there for you.
Okay.
And without any further ado, folks.
Does it have a Rex Manning in it?
No, that is Epic Records.
I know it does. I know it's Epic.
Okay. Or that's not Epic Records, Empire Records.
Empire Records, yeah.
Without any further ado, folks, Jason spinning that wheel.
We are watching JFK.
Awesome. This is a very...
It is quite the turn.
It is quite the turn. Very good movie, in my opinion. Oliver Stone movies. He's had a lot of really good movies in his directorial days. This is probably my favorite, if not second favorite one. Super good. Love American history. Love the story, the world building in this movie, and I hope that you're gonna like this too. So super looking forward to this.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it.
And then to cap it all off at the end here, Jason, what is the Marvel Cinematic Universe film that we are watching this week?
This Thursday we will be reviewing Ant-Man.
And I have never seen Ant-Man, so this is going to be a first viewing for myself. So this is going to be very interesting. But as we like to do every week, we like to leave you with our favorite sayings. I've changed it up in recent weeks, so I'm going to keep with that theme. So this week, I'm going to go with one of my grandmother's favorite sayings. She used to say to me as a little boy. She used to tell me, Devlin, it doesn't cost you anything to be nice to someone. So folks, take that as you go on through your daily lives and just try to be nice to your fellow man, because it doesn't cost you anything just to be nice to someone.
Absolutely right. And I always like to leave you with my favorite movie quote, which I attempt to live my life by, which is, never take life too seriously because you'll never make it out alive.
All right, folks. Next week, the Oliver Stone directed JFK and Marvel Cinematic Universe's Ant-Man. We'll see you.